Nice to see you tonight. Nice sitting with you. It seems like in meditation, in meditating, we're learning just how to include in everyday life the curriculum that we learn in formal sitting meditation, and it happens quite naturally, seeps into our everyday life. But to wake up to that is important. Oh, things that we see throughout the day that can connect us to the truth or to the Dharma is part of meditation. So we don't want to miss those opportunities. So tonight, I want to talk about changes. And what does changes have to do with your meditation practice? It's a fair question. Because we will talk about what to look for when we sit. Now remember, I had to learn this myself, was that at first we are concentrating very hard and practicing very diligently on being quiet and still and opening ourselves to whatever comes up. But with time, with the quietness and the stillness, what happens is we begin to see things. We begin to see things. And this is what meditation does. We begin to see things that we are not able to see in our busy day. And so we're hearing the Dharma, hearing the truth, which is so, so important. You can't take it out of your meditation practice, because it's not just about sitting. It's like Achan Chah said, the great Thai Buddhist monk, forest monk, who said hens can sit on their nest all day long, but that does not mean they're meditating. So yeah, there's a curriculum when we get quiet and still. And truly, we can go on, you know, just being quiet and still, and that's okay. But sooner or later, things are going to come up that we didn't really expect to come up. So we're searching ways to find when we sit, when we listen to the Dharma and the teachings, of recognizing them when they come up, even in your formal meditation or during the day. So we're seeing and we're paying attention that all things are changing faster than fast. And we are all connected in the biggest of ways. So we're trying to settle the rational mind so that we can begin to see that particular wisdom, but others, because it's a profound understanding, especially when we experience it directly. It has a whole nother impact when we experience things instead of thinking about things. So daily practice enables wisdom to arise during the day, and in meditation we want to feel directly, experientially. That's why we spend so much time studying mindfulness of the body, so that we can recognize exactly what's going on within all the time. I mean, it's a place to inhabit. Imagine that. We can really inhabit our bodies fully, and where the mind is part of it, but it's not controlling and sweeping our attention away from what's real, which is the only thing that is real, is the present, what's happening in the present moment. So when we experience things directly, we're not conceptualizing it. It's not coming from the mind. That's why it has a nature of its own. But it comes from the whole body awareness that we are studying and we are getting to know in a way that we haven't done before. So the Buddha says, and we are learning to see if the tried and true truths that the Buddha teaches are true. Because he says, don't take my word for it or anybody else's word for it, because these teachings are not the truth for us individually until we directly experience them. So they're all cognitive until that point, but that's what the practice is all about. So Buddha says there are three characteristics of all things: anicca, impermanence. This is all going to end. The big things, the little things, all things. And to remember dukkha, that we are in a place of unsatisfactoriness. Yeah, 10,000 sorrows and 10,000 joys. But to be able to, but what we're doing is trying to deeply understand that one is not any more important than the other one. Ooh, that's difficult. That's real difficult. That's deep, deep wisdom. And then the third is anatta, the understanding that we are all connected. We are not individuals. We are not separate. Now, the mind can tell us, if we hang out with the mind and that's our source of information, you will die feeling separate. However, the root of the problem is when we try to conceptualize our using the rational mind to figure out what's going on in our life for happiness or how to understand and figure out the way of things. So we have to understand the differences. And we have to, of course, experience the differences before we can have any close understanding of them. So impermanent wisdom, that I call it impermanent wisdom, but any time that we notice that something is impermanent, it's awakening. It's waking up something within us because it's the truth. And our intent is to see the truth of that. So we don't want to miss those opportunities. It's not about just sitting on the cushion. So if we maintain this separateness, then what naturally occurs is we will continue to cling and push away what the mind is conditioned to not want. So we can understand why learning the nature of the mind can free us from its tyranny. Now, that's not to say that the mind is the enemy. We know that. We know that the mind is very useful, and it has done many wonderful things, and we don't want to take that away from the mind. But the clinging, the grasping on things that are not going to be there, are pushing away, causes most of our suffering. So if we see the change, it helps us to see the causes of these suffering, because when we recognize it, rain on it, recognize, allow, investigate, and it nurtures that process, we are applying what we know. We are applying the teachings, because we are kind of automatically recognizing with the R, we're allowing, we're investigating by not taking it to the mind, but taking it to the body. And we've studied the body and been within the body enough to understand that we can live through the whole body. So we're applying, we're trying to apply this wisdom, all of this wisdom. So, and when we do that, when we put ourselves in that type of intention, we wake up and we become interested and we want to know. And there's no turning back. And there's no turning back. We may forget, but only for a time. So we get reminders that things are not as they appear. So that's a biggie. So let's look at a good example. All right, Stephen, give us a... I'm going to give you a visual. They're not bubbles. I've blown bubbles before, so I'm not going to blow bubbles. But I want to show you this photograph. It was on Facebook from a friend who has a most powerful telescope. And he just took this, what, Randy, 4 or 5 days ago? And it looks like it's a nebula, if you know what a nebula is. I went to Wikipedia. So all I can tell you, it's a cluster. And there's a star in there. It's a cluster around a star. But Gary takes these pictures all the time. And he said it is how many light years away, Randy?
I remember.
He said, I thought I had it in my notes. But, you know, many, many light years away from us. So all of a sudden, we're seeing a spaciousness that we don't quite understand. We don't quite savvy. How can the rational mind understand that? So when we look at the photo of the cosmos, we can only conceptualize and concretize it. It's the only thing we can do, because we don't have the wisdom of understanding that that's us. That's us. We're the stars. We're the cosmos. We're it. And we're bigger than big. Yes. So in that, we get bigger. We begin to see ourselves with more spaciousness around us. Thank you, Stephen. I just had to do that because I just think that's a great picture. But we have this sense of small mind and small body. So this picture reminds us lots of things, but mostly that how wide and tall and spacious we really are. But how we keep ourselves grounded to this one mind and body and little small mind existence, that's not going to open us to that spaciousness. And so what we begin to see in meditation is we get more spacious. That's what we touch, that spaciousness. And so with that spaciousness, then we begin to see how connected are we? Are we connected? What does that connection feel like? What does the separation feel like? See the difference? So all things are changing faster than fast, and we're all connected in the biggest of ways. So with everything changing, and we can see that change even in the human form, when we look in the mirror, I can look in the mirror and say, I'm no longer a young woman. I'm not saying I'm an old hag. No, I'm teasing. No, but I am not a young woman. So that change is noticeable. We don't have to study that. But the understanding is that everything is changing constantly. It can't be understood enough. Because in that understanding, as it gets more into the whole being, it opens us to closer to who we really are. And to begin to see when we have this separate self going on, we feel it. Especially when we start living through the body, we start feeling it hurts. And guess what comes up? It comes up the ego. The ego comes up, and the ego wants certain things for the mind and the body that are separate. So we are interconnected with everything, and everything is constantly changing. And so with that understanding, we can begin to see we are the stars, we are the galaxies, we're not separate. So by conceptualizing ourselves as not changing, that separates us automatically. But if we open in an intentional way to wider perceptions of things, and that we are the vastness of it all. See where the teachings come in with the sitting, being quiet? The vastness. Do we touch that vastness? Yes, we touch that vastness. And so we reflect on how can we sustain our open spaciousness. And of course, our practice supports that. But without that understanding and keeping that close to our hearts, we can easily become frightened by life's fleeting changes. No, I don't want it to change. But the inevitable losses, disappointments, the insecurity of our aging and death, with that misunderstanding, we start fighting against life. We start resisting life. And we continue running from our pain, our grasping at security and pleasures, and by their nature, they're not very satisfied. Because I'm sure most of us here tonight have tried lots of things. Where is that lasting happiness? I can be happy for 40 seconds sometimes. But where is the lasting happiness? And so we can learn to release or let go of thoughts and mind states, fears and worry. Everything that starts muddling our minds and keeping our attention away from the present moment and where life is lived completely. We're the walking dead. No, if we're not the walking dead, then all we're doing is living out our conditioning, prefab way of doing things. And yet, that's just one possibility. So we can learn what to do with these things that keep us feeling separate. And let's see what I have here. I'm running out of time. When we practice, it is as if we suddenly sense the constant changes in our body on a cellular or molecular level. That happens. We become more, even spacious, more spacious within the body. So what seems solid, feelings, objects, self, others, changes more clearly now whenever we pay attention because of what we're practicing. So our body becomes only a river of sensations. We don't get caught up in all the little phenomena of things that make us miserable that are optional. And that's what we begin to see. We begin to see that what we're saying to ourselves, our mind states, they are optional and causing most of our suffering. So that's what we're doing, is recognizing them and allowing them and investigating. So I'm going to end with a quote from Kalu Rinpoche. I love this quote. "We live in illusion, in the appearance of things. There is a reality. We are that reality. When you understand this, you see that you are nothing. In being nothing, you are everything. That is all." Thank you for being good listeners. And now we'll open it up to you. Thank you. Changing, changing, changing. What about all that nonsense?
Nita, I caught
You see, Paul's here. He has a comment. We'll turn the camera around.
Speak loud.
I will speak loudly. So, Nita, I love to talk. And I was out, and I happened to run into a teacher that's up from the Four Corners, you know, New Mexico, Utah, New Mexico, Colorado, Utah, right, Arizona. His name's Dave Smith, and he offered something about change, and you touched on it, because you said, when we mark our experience of ourselves as being permanent, satisfactory, or I mean mine, we've made a mistake. So y'all remember those flat wooden pencils, those carpenter pencils? I loved them. I drove my dad nuts because he wanted his carpenter pencils to stay in the garage. And I loved them because they were just different and they were cool and everything. But Dave said that the actual mark and the way it is in the Pali is like a mark that you make on a piece of wood. Like you would mark with a pencil to cut it. So he's saying, what Dave is giving us a different way to think about it, is that there may be an ontological reality where every phenomenon is changing, unsatisfactory, and not self. But that's not really relevant. The problem is that we mark different experiences as being permanent, satisfactory, or I mean mine. And that's the mistake.
And so when you say mark, you mean conceptualize.
I mean conceptually. I okay. mean, we metaphorically.
Yes.
Take a pencil, take an experience of a coffee cup full of ice cream, and we have a scoop of that. We put it in our mouth, and that's an experience. That's a perception. And there's a smell and a taste, and we go, ah, good. Now I can be happy because I have this experience. And we notice that chocolatey, velvety flavor goes away after a second. And wait a minute, I thought I could rely on this. I thought this was permanent. And we noticed that it's ultimately not satisfying. It's cloying, sweet, it makes us fat. And it's not really I, me, and mine. So, so that it's not about the ontological underlying nature of phenomena, but the mistake we make in our mind to mark, and I mean in the Pali and in the way we talk about this, it's the marks of existence. And this is not me, this is Dave.
Right.
It's the marks of existence. So we mark an experience as satisfying. Like we had a friend, you know, and she was sitting where I'm sitting now, and talked about how she was struggling with letting go of the knickknacks that she raised up through kids and grandkids and nostalgia and all of that, right?
Right.
So she was making the mistake of the experience of looking at the cup and thinking that was satisfaction right there. And she marked that experience as satisfactory. But that's a mistake. That cup is only going to last as long as, and it's going to be a cup. And it's going to be heavy to carry. I think you get where I'm going.
Yes, that's a beautiful explanation. Absolutely.
Because the poly, the mark, is like those funny flat pencils that I used to steal from my dad all the time. It's a mark you make on a piece of wood to cut it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, don't y'all kind of have a visceral feeling of that?
Yeah.
Take a speed square and you mark it with one of those pencils and you...
Probably not as deeply as you, but, you know, I get it. Thank you, Paul. That's beautiful.
Beautiful explanation.
Yeah.
I like what you said about it cutting you off. Like, you talked about the cutting yourself off from the unity that you feel with others, but then, you know, what you were talking about, kind of the marking, that it kind of cuts you off from the flow of time, from
the
constant changing of everything and the reality that holds. And cutting, I guess, in the same way as when you cut yourself off from other people, it's cutting yourself off from the real you and the changing of time. And
yes.
Yeah. It was, the way you phrased it was
thanks, Michael.
So we really haven't been known to really, even on a mundane level, to be able to know how to deal with change, you know, throughout history. So why not look at it in a different way, you know? Holy change. No, nothing's holy. Yes, everything's holy. Holy change.
Mary Margaret.
Mary Margaret.
Muted.
I think you got to unmute Mary Margaret. There you go.
Help me understand what you mean by change.
Everything, Mary Margaret, you can't, the mind, rational mind cannot see the changes that are actually going on even within you. You are mostly space. If we looked at you under a microscope, you would be mostly space, and you would be like this.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth, okay?
Yeah.
So, that's changing, okay? You're constantly changing with the cosmos, with everything else, simultaneously. We're all changing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the mind tries to stabilize, and it does a very good job of stabilizing so that we can live with one another. So we've got to have the mind, and the mind does very good things, like enable us not to, you know.
Yeah.
So, but again, we get stuck in thinking that there is no change, you know, that we are solid, we stay the same, and we don't. That's not the truth. That's how it appears, but it's not the truth. And remember, the truth sets us free. Regardless of what the truth is, it sets us free. So we're after the truth. And the truth is that everything is changing constantly. Scientists probably see that faster than anybody, you know, because they see things through their instruments of how everything is. But it's where we don't understand change and we say, wait a minute, I don't want it to happen. I don't want it to happen. And it causes us a lot of suffering.
So what, therefore, change is opposite that?
Well, another way to look at it really is, makes more sense to me is I instead of using the idea of change, I think of impermanence.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Oh. So just think of everything is impermanent.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Always. Yeah. So I can work better with that term that I can change. So I look at impermanence, and that's really the Pali word anicca is impermanence, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can work with it that way.
Yeah.
There's nothing solid. Nothing that doesn't change. Everything's impermanent.
When we're in a true meditational space, we're more aware of that change?
Yes, we can see it. We can begin to see the rising and falling away of everything that we see. We can, when sounds come and go, we can recognize the coming and going of sounds, the coming and going of sensations, the rising and falling away of thoughts, and feelings, and also emotions. We can see that all these things are constantly changing. So we can even see this, that our sense of self is also impermanent. There's just not anything we can really concretize there, because we have this concept that we've created of something that's separate that we call self, when that's also changing and impermanent.
Yeah.
There's nothing we can see or understand. It's not so. So the Buddha taught just one thing, and it's hard. It's kind of nice to get back to the basics. He taught suffering and the end of suffering. That is all. Suffering and the end of suffering. And he said the cause of suffering is grasping and clinging, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what is the cause of the grasping and the clinging? Well, the cause of grasping and clinging is this constant arising sense of a permanent self that grasps and clings. If we start to see that that's also impermanent, then there's less of a tendency for us to grasp and hold on to anything, including the teacups that Paul was talking about. Because there's nothing, there's no body there to cling to anything. So anyway, that's another way of looking at reality.
Yeah.
as impermanence.
Well,
not grasping.
And the main thing is things are not as they appear. So with that kind of in our system, then we're just not taking everything for face value. That's what we're
right.
doing. We're digging into things that are not obvious. And we have found a way, a path that enables us to do that. So we're seeing things that the rational mind cannot teach us.
On the experiential level, then things are not conceptual.
Right.
But we have a tendency to conceptualize everything, including each other. But in reality, that's only a concept. And so that's the deep truth that Anita's talking about. We start to see like reality that Kala Rinpoche just talked about. That we're not separate from anything, each other or anything at all. We're part of it all, constantly arising and changing. There's nothing really to hold on to there. And there's a great joy and freedom in understanding that deeply. And there's also the letting go of suffering, letting go of dukkha.
Was there ever an
anxiety
about not having that, realizing that there's not that firm foundation to put your feet on and that everything is changing?
Yes. So what Michael was saying, isn't there often great anxiety when you see that everything is changing, including the idea of self? Yeah. Yeah, at first that could be a real fear that's going on because you think you've lost all those grounding concepts. But if you go a little further and start to just sit with that, then you can start to see the freedom of living in an experiential existence rather than a totally conceptual mind state. And then we can start to relax with that. But yeah, you're right. Sometimes if we approach that in a certain way, there is I think with everybody, a certain fear that arises.
Oh, yeah.
At first.
Well, yeah. And you can see if our attitude towards change or impermanence shifts into more of the truth, then we don't suffer as much.
No, because we're safe with the truth of things.
Yes.
And really more unsafe in the conceptual framework
yes.
that we set up. The impermanence conceptual, I mean my framework that we've devised, that's really a lot more unstable than... because I like to ask the story sometimes when Anita and I sit together, sometimes we'll say, just thinking of a conceptual universe, who are you without your story? Or right now, anybody here, who would you be without your story? You'd be right here. Right here. So we also learn in our meditation practice, we learn to come back to the present moment experience of the here and now, where there always is just this. There's never next, there's never before. That's all made up in our minds, conceptually. There is always just this moment. There's always just this. But we're not used to that. And so our meditation practice it's a way of teaching us to keep